session number 25060, Reel 1.
No more than normal.
Jack Bacon, Reel 1. Where and when were you born?
I was born in the City of London, St John Street, over an undertaker's shop, 13th of April 1916.
And where did you go to school?
Which makes me a Cockney. I went to Wilton Road School in Hackney. I then, because of my massive brain power, was transferred to a central school called Dawson Central, where I remained until I left in 1916. No, when I was 16, sorry.
1932. When I was 16. Mm-hmm. And did you enjoy school?
I enjoyed the girls at school. I wanted to get out of school as soon as I could when I got to about 15. And my grandfather got me a job in an accountant's office, and I stuck there a month and I wanted to go back to school.
True.
And did you have any hobbies while you were at school?
Yes, chasing girls. No, football, cricket, boxing, running. I used to box at the YMCA. I used to run for the at Eton Manor ground at Leighton. And I played football for Walthamstow Avenue.
Very sporting, then?
Yes, very.
And what did your dad do?
My father was a manager of a public house in Hackney, which was a lovely area then, but it's no longer a lovely area because it has a suffer of immigration.
And was he in the First World War?
Yes, my father joined up in 1914 along with five of his brothers, and he was in the Royal Irish Rifles, and he stayed in France and Belgium, particularly in the Somme area where we lost so many men, until he came out in 1918, severely gassed. He also obtained the MC for being a very brave soldier.
So, after you'd left school, did you continue at your first place of employment?
No, I left there and I got a job in a firm in reptile skins, selling reptile skins, with an Indian who was a rather nasty character, but still that's by the by now. And the wages were extremely poor, 10 shillings a week, for many, many, many hours. But we used to sell all sorts of lizard skins, pythons, ram goaties, lizards, crocodile skins, fur skins, mica, snake venom, all these things. Snake venom used to come over from India, from Calcutta, and used to go to Liverpool Hospital. You know, well, I think it was the main hospital in Liverpool, where they used it for snake bites.
So you were selling the skins?
Yeah.
And were they
sold them to the handbag trade and the shoe trade. And I've always wanted to be a salesman, and I'm still a salesman.
So, how long did you stay there?
I left there to go to the war, and when I came back, my job had been taken over by a Hungarian who had never been out of the country, never did anything, and I walked out and went to a plastics firm, selling plastics for the manufacturer of furniture, shoes, handbags and that sort of stuff, and I stayed there for a long time until they went down the drain and a number of us got thrown out, what do they call it?
Made redundant?
Yes, that's the very word. And I was 54 at the time. Got made redundant on the Tuesday, started again on the Thursday. They gave me £1,800. I went out and spent the whole lot on a Volvo car, and I started in business on my own. No one else to help me. No warehouse, nothing. Used to work from home. 2 days later, and 8 years later, I did £1,100,000 a year turnover. I had a very, very, very good business. And then I was the age of 72, and one of my very best customers a Cypriot, did a runner on me, and when I say a runner, he skipped the country with £62,000 of my money. And I started drinking, which was a stupid thing, which made me suffer over a period of 3 or 4 years. I had 4 thrombosis. Four pancreatitis attacks was the first, then 4 thrombosis after. I went to Cyprus. I don't know whether I should put this on tape. I went to the Cyprus for the express purpose of doing him some sort of severe damage 3 times, 4 times a year for 3 years. And then when I had friends out in Cyprus, they said to me, Jack, don't do it. For the simple reason, if you lay a hand on him, you'll go in prison. And a prison in Cyprus is not like it is in England. You won't get a television set or carpet on the floor. So I live with it, but it's left me with the permanent thing. I'm now on warfarin for the rest of my life. And lots of other things it's caused me.
So when you were with the reptile people, obviously it was during the 30s. Were you aware of what was happening in Germany?
That is a big question. I remember Mosley here in this country. Yes, I do remember it, because my governor for a time was a Jew, and he was mixed up very, very much in getting refugees from Germany over here. But I mean, I must be honest and say that I haven't really thought about back to those years as to my feelings regarding the Jews. We have the same feeling now with regard to Palestine and the Jews there, and I think much of the trouble there has been caused by the fact that the Palestinians are jealous of what the Jews did there. They went out there with a nothing land, and they turned it into a something land. But the thing that surprised me, without going too deeply into these things, is why, then, if we go back to Bible times, we never heard about trouble between the Arabs and the Jews. And now, all of a sudden, it's materialistic which has come into it. One's got something and the other one hasn't got. Someone's got some land, but then the Jews pinch some of the land from the Arabs, so I don't know how you work it out. There'll never be peace there.
So, just taking you back, were you involved with a local home guard when as war loomed?
What, my age? No. Not at all. My father was. As soon as ever the war came, the 1939 war came, he was in the home guard. Straight in. Patriotic boy he was. Not like me, I was a coward.
So...
No, I never... I got married anyway. So... I don't think she liked me so much, she wouldn't like me going off to her home guard. I'm only kidding.
So you got married prior to the war?
I got married in... I've missed something out. I got married 4 months before the start of the war to a lady called Beryl, who I'd courted for 6 years. And there was a sailor who was also courting, or trying to court at the same time. He was in the Navy. We got married in the April. I went into the army in, I think, October, whenever it was. And I then went overseas for the 5 odd years. When I came back, he was in my home with a baby. And I came back, and it was my reward for 5 years overseas to come back to a sailor and a baby. And I walked straight out and went to my mother and father. I got a divorce. And oddly enough, in one of my businesses, my employment, I was doing buying for a handbag firm. And one day, the sailor walked into my office to sell me stuff. But he died. He died about 5 or 6 years later. But that was not a very pleasant thing to come home after that time. And I gave my house up and everything. I had a beautiful house, a barnet, 3 bedroom right at the edge of the woods. Must be worth a fortune now. But these things go under the drain, don't they? You can't keep on about it.
So you were called up, were you?
No, I volunteered. I volunteered. I tried to get in the ref first of all, because I thought myself a dashing pilot. But they said we're not taking anyone till February. So I went to the army and I said, "Would you please take me?" They said, "Well, don't think much of you, but I suppose we'll have to accept what we get."
So how long after the war started was this?
I went in. All right, we've got it here, haven't we? I enlisted in the Royal Army Service Corps, 13th of the 2nd, 1940. And I went to number 8 driver training depot, which was at Felixstowe. On the seafront, up and down, faces as red, it was freezing cold, and we were taught how to fire rifles with a 2.2 rifle, .22 rifle, on the pier from about 15 yards, and that was our training for shooting.
So Were you in barracks with a load of other lads?
We were all in billets. And we had a bus driver who made a fortune out of stenciling our kit bags. Sixpence a time.
And were you issued with uniform and equipment at
that
time?
Yeah. Oh, I looked very handsome. Very handsome. Got no idea. But then we did a lot of posting about, as you can see from the record here. I wasn't there very long.
No, I'll just carry on with that then. So, what sort of food were you having there?
No, that's a long while ago. It's 1939.
Was it a bit of a shock after home?
Yeah. It was more of a shock when we got to Egypt. We had no bread and 2 pints of water a day, and corned beef every day, and dry biscuits every day. That was a shock.
So you did your basic training. Did you find that the fact that you'd done a lot of sports had helped you?
Yeah.
That you were fit?
I was fit. Of course I was fit.
And how did you cope
I had to be fit. I couldn't catch a girl otherwise.
And how did you cope with the army lifestyle?
No problem.
You didn't mind the lack
Not
of privacy?
Not at all.
And you
well I enjoyed it.
Discipline.
As a matter of fact, I love the army, to be perfectly honest. I never regretted, all right, we had tough times in Egypt and Italy, but from the point of view of being in the army, I didn't regret it. I enjoyed it.
Okay. So
and I think a lot, if you ask a lot of men if you did any more and you ask them the same question, I think a lot of them would say, yes, it did me the world of good. Because it took you out of a namby-pamby life into a real life.
So how long was your basic training?
Well, basic training was really a month. Less than a month, wasn't it?
Did you get any home leave at that time, being
a
married man?
No. I didn't get leave then. We used to get weekend leave when we got down to a place called Bulford in Hampshire.
So after your initial training, you got transferred?
We went down first of all to Bulford, which was a big army camp in near Salisbury. And then we went to a place called Blandford in Dorset, which is very nice because a very nice young lady there. And then I went to post of the 50th Division on their supplies.
So did you know at that time what part of the army you'd like to be in? Did you volunteer to go in any particular section?
No. When I volunteered, they just said you're in that, so that was it. I said I want to be a driver. Yeah, probably that was it. I want to be a driver. That's why I went to the driver, training centre.
And what did you learn to drive?
Paper trucks.
The OY.
The sergeant said to me, he said, you can drive, can't you? I said, yeah, I've got a car. Probably in the blanket thing. He said, you say you could drive. They didn't think much of my driving skill, but it did improve.
What other vehicles did you drive?
Only that in this country, and then went out to the desert and we drove Bedford vans, articulated vans, and 10-ton Macs from America. They were beautiful. But I didn't do a lot of driving because I was high up.
So
you had someone drive you. Fancy asking me a question like that.
Can you tell me something about the sort of weapons training you had with like hand grenades and machine guns?
None. Service corps.
Did you do any anti-gas precautions?
Yes. We were given a gas mask and we were taken through a little hut. So you walk through there and take it off and you're in there about 15 seconds. You walked out the other side and you were still alive and you were so pleased. And that was the training you got.
And did you go on any exercise manoeuvres?
No. No, I think you're asking me a question now which really are not affiliated to the service I was in, because it was merely the handling of supplies from a depot to the front line.
So you were training to do that? Did they give you some?
No.
It's a case of just going learn to
went in and you learned to do it.
I see. And so
there was a lot to learn in food stuff. How certain materials had to be stacked and the warranty dates and that sort of stuff. And the greatest thing was the organisation to, many, many times we were handling thousands of tonnes a day and it had to be all very well organised. That's why I got the job as a sergeant major, because I was a very good improviser. We had a brigadier come round and I took him round and he said to me after, he said, you, sergeant major, are the finest improviser we've got in the Middle East. So I said, thanks very much. When would you send me the cheque?
So you were telling me that, just to keep you in the order of your service, you went to Blandford Barracks, and then that was in July 1940, and you stayed there till January 41 when you went to the Supply Technical Training and Mobile Action Centre.
Was that Blandford?
After Blandford.
After Blandford?
Mm-hmm.
There was a little place called Fontmore Magna, but that was only a little village.
And did it have a big supply depot there?
No, nothing.
And after that...
I can tell you now that we never saw any supply depots from the time I went in until I got out to Egypt. Never saw a supply depot.
So what did your work consist of?
Well, we were waiting really for... sort of hanging around and doing things during the day. You did all sort of office work and that sort of stuff, but it was really a transition period to get you from there to there to there.
And did you know you were going to be going to Egypt?
Yes, because they gave us pit helmets, which after 1 month we'd all ditched. And honest and true, the blokes used to wear their boots, their socks, a pair of shorts, and that was it.
So when did you go off to Egypt?
Ah, I can tell you. I can give you the answer here. Proceed to Paris. Proceed to Portland, 18th of the 3rd, 41.
And how did you get there?
By train from Dinner's Paris to Bristol. And I don't know if I can tell you a story on this. We had an Irishman, and he was a real Irishman. He'd been out on the booze the night before. And when we had the parade about 6 o'clock in the morning at the railway station, the train was there, they called out the names, everybody said yes, and he'd got a bloody great big drum with him. So when they called out his name, he banged on the drum. So he got stupid reprimanded. We all got in the train, he got in the door one side and got out the other, was never seen again. That happened in South Africa a lot.
Did you have pre-embarkation leave at home?
Yes, we had a fortnight, yeah. But then...
You went back to London?
Yes.
Your wife?
The interesting thing was that when we set sail, we hit an uncharted wreck. We'd only been sailing about 2 hours. And we went up to Scotland, where all the convoy was getting ready. And one morning we got up and they'd all gone except us, with one destroyer. And we'd evidently damaged the bottom part of the ship. And they took us back to Liverpool with the destroyer escort. Put us on the docks there, fire watching all through the Blitz. They said they're going to kill us before they get us out there. So then we again went off and we went virtually to America, then to Freetown, then all around the Cape. We had the worst storm for 90 years going around the Cape. 11 ships were there and 3 got round. And they were literally 18, 20,000 ton ships. And you could look at a ship by the side of it and see it. 2 or 3 minutes later, you knew, look, it's gone. It was called the Hollows, and it was a meeting of the Pacific and the Atlantic, and it caused these great big swells like this. And the ship, you just didn't see the mast or anything.
Which ship were you on?
The Reina del Pacifica.
And was that a liner that had been taken over?
I suppose you could call it a liner, but it wasn't a cruise liner. It was a poor old thing, about 50 years old.
And what sort of accommodation did you have on that?
The hammocks.
And did you do any work actually on the ship? Or?
No. The men did, but I didn't. They had to move stores up and down and that sort of, and carry the food. And
had you got yourself a certain position by that time, and you say the men did?
I think I was a corporal then. Probably a corporal. The corporals don't work in it. They give it to the last corporal, and the last corporal was given to the privates. And when I got to Sergeant Major, everybody had to do what they were told.
And was
there was one terrible thing happened to me on that ship. I was very lonely one day, and a chap came out to me and said, "What on earth's the matter?" I said, "I've got nothing to do." So the time hangs heavy on my hands. So he said, "Why don't you have a cigarette?" I said, "I don't smoke, I've never smoked." "Oh," he said, "go on, you try one." He said, "You'll have it, pass the time." So I took it. "Oh, it's all right." Of course, right through the war, we were on supplies all the way through. And unfortunately, I've got to be careful what I admit here, you used to help yourself to cigarettes. And I was smoking in bad times in Italy, 50 and 60 a day. And I was smoking again when I came home. and I got married again, and she smoked, and we used to redecorate our dining room every 18 months because it was brown. And then every winter I was in bed with coughing. And after about three times I got up and I said to her, "Kay, I'm not smoking again." And she put her hands on my shoulders and she went, "Ha, ha, ha." I said, "You'll see, I'll never touch another cigarette." And from that day to now, I've never touched. I'd have been dead. Can't keep on like that. But that's not army stuff, is it? Sorry, I digressed.
So, what sort of... you say you slept in a hammock, but during the day, did you have a sort of non-coms?
We used to get training lectures. Things that you're supposed to learn and what you shouldn't do and what you should do when you get there and how you treat the natives and that sort of stuff.
But it was a
lazy life. 77 days to get there, doing nothing.
And were you in a convoy?
Yes. Yep.
And there were several
times we had the old depth charges going off.
Is that from for submarines?
Yeah. But surprising enough, we went virtually to America, then down to Freetown, and all the way around. You couldn't come through the canal because we hadn't got it then, obviously.
Did you stop in Freetown to replenish?
We stopped. You're making me think out all my memories, aren't you? We used to stop in Freetown and hang over the side, and the canoes used to come up laden with bananas and pears and all the fruits and that. And we used to have jackknives and have woolies and all the things like that. And it used to be, how many bananas for one of these? You'd have six. No, we want one for the queen, one for the king, one for the prince, and one for me. And then they used to put it up in a basket. That was good. That was good.
I bet you hadn't seen I bet you hadn't seen fruit like that for a long time.
No. Then we went round the Cape and we stopped at Durban. And the most interesting thing there, three. One was, you'd been blackout for all those days, you couldn't even light a cigarette there. When you sailed into Durban, the whole place was a blaze of light. It was absolutely brilliant. And the next morning, when we docked, there was a lady who used to stand on the entrance to the harbour, and she was called the White Lady of Durban. She was 45, 50, and she had a most beautiful voice. And she used to sing to all the troops coming in. Absolutely brilliant weather was. And all the shops there, the restaurants, they used to say, notices outside, British or soldiers, all you can eat for sixpence. Brilliant. And they put us on Clarewood Camp, which was a race course. And at night time, we used to take a turn to be sort of guard commander of the tent. And first meal we had there, they had quince jam. And as long as I shall live, I remember this quince jam. And real bread, beautiful it was, absolutely beautiful. Practically every day, I must draw things out of me now. Practically every day from leaving England till we got to South Africa, we had, guess what, rabbit stew. We said to the cook, "Got to change for us tonight, cook." He'd say, "Rabbit stew, boys." They must have had about 9 million rabbits on their ship. I think some of them were still scampering around.
Did you find it difficult to, in your mess, when it was, with the weather being bad? How did they cope then?
No, I've never been, never. I've been through every gale it's possible to go through. Forced toils, never been sick in my life. Never.
Were a lot of the young men...
It's just the brain, you see, that's what it is. It's the extra brain power that does it.
Were a lot of the men sick?
Yeah. One poor chap was sick every day from the time we left home till he got there.
Did they give you any vaccinations and things before you went?
You know the answer to that. I had a pay book like that, and it was page after page stuck in there. Every month you used to get them. Hundreds of them.
Did you get any lectures about venereal disease? And
yeah, but it wouldn't apply to me. I was a good boy. No.
Did you get much shore leave while you were in Durban?
We were there 3 weeks, and we got practically every night out, and days out too. And the South African people used to be waiting at the dock gates with their cars, and they used to take the boys all over the place. Johannesburg, all over the place. Absolutely wonderful. But being me, I met a girl.
Called?
Claire. She was a model. And if the relationship had continued, I would have been bankrupt for the rest of my life. Very beautiful girl. Beautiful. You mustn't start me thinking about that.
So after Durban, you carried on?
Up to Suez. And then from there we went to a camp called Tahag Camp, where I got sunstroke the first night I was there, because I laid in the tent, and the open-sided tent, and the sun got me on my back. I never felt so good in my life. And
were you given any sort of sunscreen?
No. No!
So you had shorts, did you, and a pith helmet?
Yeah, which we threw away.
Why was that?
God, they're going to sue me for this pith helmet.
Why didn't you like the pith helmets?
Oh, they looked awful.
Were they heavy?
No, they weren't heavy. We used to put the little forage caps on. We used to ditch those. We were so brown. Oh.
So when you arrived there, you went to this camp.
Then we went to, from there we went to port side on dock duty because our depot wasn't ready. And we got bombed by Stukas while we were there. And we had a Norfolk chap, a real Norfolk dumpling. When we were being bombed one night, I was trying to make holes in the sand to get down low. And he was sitting there and he was looking up in the sky. And of course, these Stukas used to come down like that with a screamer on it. And he'd say, "Here be another booger coming down." Typical Norfolk accent. And when it was over, I made a beeline for the toilet, as a lot of others did. But then we got our depot, and then from there on we worked. We worked hard.
So you had slip trenches, did you, to protect you?
We did have slip trenches, which the blokes had their 4 pints of beer a month and fell into. It was a regular. We used to get 4 pints of beer, but some blokes didn't drink, and they'd sell them to another one, and he'd drink a lot because he hadn't had a drink for a month, and the next morning they'd go around and fish him out of slip trenches. Called Stella Beer.
So when you got to your depot, how was that set up?
Oh, that was wonderful. That was really wonderful. We had tarmac roads and sheds with 6 exits, so you could load 6 lorries or take in or load 6 lorries at a time. And the stuff then used to go up on the main roads up to the desert. But we were losing a lot of stuff there, tea, sugar, that sort of stuff. And the RSM said to me one night, he said, "We can do something about this." So we got into a truck, all hidden up, down by our mess in the evening, went down to one of the sheds, and got on. They're all stacked stuff, either wooden cases or sack commodities like rice and sugar and that sort of stuff. And we got on the top, the corrugated iron came up, and there was a gap of about 2 feet to allow air, then the roof. And we got out there and we had this view up to the road which went out to Cairo. And around about 11:30, 12 o'clock at night, we saw an Arab coming across. So the RSM said, "Don't do anything. Quiet, not a sound." And behind him there were a load more Arabs. And they used to have these fights with long, long sticks. I don't know whether you've ever heard of it. This sort of thing with sticks. And these fellows were behind him carrying these sticks. So he said, "Wait, wait, wait." This fella came up, and the long road they called it, called a Galabia. And he fished down there, and he got the keys out, opened the door, got the stuff out, put it on these bamboo poles, started walking back. So our RSM, "Right, you should let him have it." And we got a letter of commendation. It was actually going up onto Egyptian army trucks, which were on the main road, and they were taken up and sent them to all the cafes and restaurants in Cairo. When the sheds were built, the contractors had extra keys made.
So did they have a perimeter fence? Or?
No.
So that made it really
difficult? We used to have an infantry guard. He's come down every night.
Did you have any local Arabs working?
Yes.
Within the camp?
No, they weren't local Arabs. They were prisoner of war. They were either Libyans in the early days or Italians. This is why I speak fluent Italian, because I had 3 years with them there and then another 2.5 years in Muslim. And the Italians worked well. They were good workers. But the Libyans were a lazy lot. Germans, we had a few Germans, and they were brilliant. Very, very, very well organised. Good time in Egypt.
So how far away from the front line were you?
Well, it varied according to how the battle went. 20, 30, 40 miles, whatever. We went to Cairo once on leave, and that was an eye-opener. The sex side of Cairo is not to be even fit on this tape. But the best leave we only got one leave a year, 7 days a year, which is not a lot, was in Tel Aviv, in Palestine. That was absolutely brilliant. And the desert at night time is freezing, but it is the most wonderful place to be. You could be in the desert at night time. You'd lay on, many times you'd be laying on the ground, and you put your steel helmet down as a pillow, overcoat over you, because it dropped from 110 to 50. And all you do all night long is urinate the desert because you were so cold. And you put a balaclava on, and your gloves, and your overcoat, and all that sort of stuff. But at night time, the desert, there are thousands and thousands and thousands of stars up there. And you feel they're so near and so clear, you feel you put your hand up. And there's always this sickly smell from the desert. And it is absolutely beautiful. It really is. It's something I don't think you'll never, 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 ever forget. Never forget. Let's enjoy it.